But the match for the WWF Championship definitely rebounds from this nadir that we had.
Yeah, it's a good match, but it's a weird match. Yes. I agree with what you just said. It's Triple H and Kurt Angle, heel versus heel. Angle's the champion, a poorly booked champion.
Yep.
And
a chicken shiznit guy on top like they like to do with The Miz, with Seth Rollins. That's how they want to book
those
guys.
And they did
it
with Jericho the year after. Yes, and it was funny, Angle even told Jericho, hey, you know, don't be too happy, you ain't going to be the guy.
Right.
I think there was a story, Jericho talks about one of his books that Angle told him that, because Jericho was basically Angle of the next year.
He was.
And
carbon copy almost.
So
the positioning.
This is one where, you know, we didn't do any real bitching about Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
In our last mini episode when we covered the 2000 Rumble, because quite frankly there was no need to, because he put on a career making performance against Cactus Jack in the world title match. In 2000, towards the end, you started to see some of the issues that people would forever kind of gripe out about.
Yep.
With Triple H. I remember really thinking that it was the wrong move for him to go over Jericho in that Last Man Standing match. But even worse was a couple months later when it was him and Angle, and it looked like Triple H was set to go babyface and Stephanie was going to turn on him and go with Angle, and that Angle would be your new main event heel. A funny thing happened along the way, because as I just stipulated, Kurt Angle's the world champion here. Triple H beats Kurt Angle pretty clean at Unforgiven. Stephanie stays with him.
Mm-hmm.
Given what we know transpired, it's tough to make the argument that Triple H probably didn't politic to keep that.
Sure.
Now, given that they wound up getting married and had a very real life and good on-screen chemistry, I'm not going to say that Angle and Stephanie would work better than Triple H and Stephanie. So it goes back to the point again that, okay, Triple H got all these favors from the booking committee and stuff, but if anyone else got those favors, I don't think they would have done any better.
He didn't want to be storyline booking his own divorce when he wasn't in real life married yet.
And I'm not sure. It would have been interesting. Would they still? How would that have worked? Like, you know, it's funny. I think at the time, I don't know when this came out. Were people, I don't remember in the fall of 2000 knowing that they were boinking each other.
Well, oh, here's the thing, too. I go back to
When did that come out?
I go back to this before. China claims not to know until the spring of 2001, based on the shoot interviews.
I know, yeah.
So here's the funny thing. When he's at home talking to her, what justification does he give for not wanting to break up with Stephanie on screen? Well, yeah. You know, Joni, that just wouldn't work for me.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Thanks
for this briefcase, but I'm going to go now. Didn't she, like, buy him a briefcase or something like that?
Yeah, something
big thing.
Like that.
So I'm not going to complain that about the Stephanie not going with Angle part.
Right.
But Angle clearly should have been booked better in these months, because he was booked perfectly before that. Actually, to be honest with you, he probably did too many jobs and he still got over, which speaks volumes that, like, you know, nobody did that many jobs as a heel,
right,
on the ascent. Like, you remember, he jobbed to, like, the Big Show in a comedy match at Backlash.
Yep.
He jobbed to the Undertaker Fully Loaded,
yeah,
pretty clean, and yet you still knew. I remember pretty early in the year, I thought, like, this is the guy who should beat Rock for the title.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, and it was a good match, but they never went with him as the lead heel because they were doing the whole Triple H was the mastermind behind running Austin down.
Yep.
And he never went full babyface, although he wrestles Benoit at the October pay-per-view as a babyface.
Yeah.
After kind of being a heel. Like, he was this weird tweener in the early fall.
It was like The Rock's pseudo-face turn the fall of 98. Almost identical.
Not nearly as effective, though.
No.
Like,
no. I'm not commenting on effectiveness, but positioning.
Yeah, but you're right.
And that makes him hotter as a face, because it's like, damn it, I don't know if I'm supposed to cheer for him. And it's like, but that makes it even hotter, because it's almost like the forbidden fruit as far as the psychology to the fans.
You know what? Actually, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Because the people really did want to cheer for him.
They did.
And
they wanted desperately.
But what the difference is came with the heel turn. With The Rock, the heel turn worked beautifully.
Right.
With Triple H, I guess it worked pretty well as well. But in his case, it came at the expense of Angle. Like, Angle was of kind of a geek. He was booked as a geek,
right,
is the term. He was always winning fluky in his matches, whereas Triple H would always win in, like, this epic fashion when he was the heel champion.
Yep.
So there's a big difference there. And I get it, okay? Triple H was their long-term heel. Angle wasn't. You can bitch till the cows come home that it should have been the other way.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, and I'm not... although Angle is the one guy who I think could have maybe gotten over more in Triple H.
Here's the thing. Let me say this.
I really think that.
I agree with the commonly accepted IWC consensus that the downfall of the company creatively in the 2000s, the first tiny seed, was the way that they resolved Triple H Angle in September of 2000. I agree with that, that's the beginning of the danger signs to come. Having said that, the one thing I can say in the company's defense is, structurally, especially with Austin coming back, you always need strong heels to counteract the faces. Austin and Rock needed, collectively, Triple H and Angle on the other side. That kept it even at the top.
Well, there was Benoit who didn't kind of got shafted, too.
Benoit and Grant. And you did have The Undertaker coming up, but you had...
He's a face,
Undertaker
though.
Undertaker has a face.
Yeah.
So that, for balance sake,
they turned Rikishi.
Right.
Yeah, which didn't really work
worst,
so well.
One of the worst ideas ever.
It kind of killed him, although I thought he had maybe kind of peaked as a babyface, too. He was not going to be, like, a main event babyface.
Well, it was pathetic, and we'll see this with Rumbles to come, is when they tried to flip him again like nothing had ever happened,
and
it felt so flat.
No, that was bad. That was bad. But this match, you know, heel versus heel matches typically don't work.
Right.
And they always kind of lead to dead crowds. But what, again, with the dynamic here that was off is... Angle was almost portrayed in this sympathetic light.
Right.
You know, like, oh, like, he didn't get Stephanie. You know, Stephanie kind of, like, turned him down.
Mm-hmm.
And he's proving himself because, you know, Kurt Angle may be the WWF champion, but by God, Triple H is still the game. And that means more than being the WWF champion.
Yep.
And
it's like being John Cena championship.
Yeah. And he goes over here. He finally gets his win over Triple H, but it was only because of interference from Austin.
Right.
I mean, they do a lot of cool false finishes here,
right,
kind of, you know, like, you know, 2 3/4 counts. It's a good match. I give it 3 3/4, but you just had the feeling that they had actually missed their window with Angle going over Triple H.
Right.
To me, logically, you have Angle go over Triple H on his way to winning the title, not after.
Right.
Although, again, I guess it's a case of, okay, well, Angle needs opponents as his champion, but Angle was just never booked strong.
It was a strange dynamic. He
didn't, like, Eric Angle get involved at the Survivor Series? They did some goofy finish where he beat Undertaker.
I don't know that. It might have happened.
I'm pretty sure they did.
Okay.
There was that 6-way Hell in the Cell at Armageddon where he kind of won on a fluke.
Mm-hmm.
I think somebody else did all the damage and he, like, rolled over and got the pin.
Mm-hmm.
So they did not get the most out of Kurt Angle, who could have been a great heel champion and was really not here.
Right.
He winds up losing the title to The Rock the next month on pay-per-view.
Exactly. One of the rare times that they have moved a title off of the champion before WrestleMania and then moved the champion down the card. That hasn't generally happened. Generally, if you left Royal Rumble with the title, you still
had a very
good
chance. Was this
the
first time that happened?
I think it is, actually. I mean, notwithstanding weird years like 97 where they were playing ping pong with it, that
you're right,
doesn't
90,
count.
Yeah, 97, you're right.
If you take 97 out of the mix, I mean, we're doing this off the top of our heads, people. That's what big nerds we are, that we can do this off the top of our heads. I don't think any other year they ever did that.
No.
So
yeah, you're right.
And then
99, they did, The Rock left Royal Rumble with the title, and remember, they flipped a couple times with him and Foley leading up to it.
In the era subsequently, of one of the things that I hated the most, the Elimination Chamber in February, so that the whole WrestleMania main event could be up for grabs 4 weeks before the actual thing. That probably happened a few times in the brand split era, but it happened here, and it was kind of strange and notable that it did. One other note that I had was about the positioning in this match. Trish Stratus and Stephanie McMahon.
I thought that took away from the match.
But here's the thing, too, that the storyline between them was, you know, who's the most powerful female in the WWF. And here's what I'm thinking. This is what jumps out at me. When you're doing a historical project here like we are and looking back over time, not until you got it. We talk about all these things that wouldn't have come into play before the Attitude Era. It's only in the Attitude Era that, like, quote-unquote, real-life power and everything like that became a thing. because let's say Missy Hyatt had been in the company the same time as Miss Elizabeth. It never would have been about who's got the most real-life power. It still would have all been kayfabe stuff. Here they're trying to somewhat, not exactly break the fourth wall. It's not like they were trying to sell the Trish Stratus angle as a shoot. But you know what I mean? They were moving more into the gaga of actual soap opera-ish type stuff outside the ring as opposed to the product in the ring. That's something we didn't have before the Attitude Era. You cannot picture an angle like this even in 1995 WWF. Like, who's the most powerful female in the WWF? If it was over anything, it would have been over the Women's Championship. And that would have been, you know, to see who's the most powerful woman.
But yeah, so that actually further denigrated that women's title thing.
Yeah.
Probably not by accident. But yeah, I thought like Trish's Angle's one-night manager here was kind of took away from it. Of course, all led to like that thing where Vince humiliated her on Raw.
Right.
Was,
bark like a dog.
Yeah. Take off your bra.
Although whenever he does that voice, it's always entertaining. Yes. I got
to
give him that.
And they did in the lead up to this. There was, you know, I do have to admit I chuckled. The video package for this Triple H angle match.
Uh-huh.
They were showing Triple H or Trish agreeing to being Angle's manager. And Vince, what are you doing? Why are you being in Kurt Angle's corner? And Trish is like, you're right, Mr. McMahon. I've been very bad. I think you need to spank me. And Vince's facials, well, I mean, it's sort of eye rolling, I guess.
Did he give the big gulp?
I think, no, he just kept giving that, I'm very interested in what you're saying look. And that was kind of amusing.
Per Vince is always a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, this started that period where he would just start groping his employees on thing while he was married. Way to go, Vince.
Yep.
My hat's off to you. So is that it for the world title match?
We
talked about
it.
Kurt Angle went over.
Yep.
It was all right, but he loses. Poorly booked champion.
That's about it.
Triple H finds a way. By the way, Triple H would then the next month beat Steve Austin. The second time in less than 6 months he beat a guy who was about ready to win the world title.
That's right.
And then he gets hurt, and no one ever got their heat back on him, really.
Just like he planned it.
So, yeah, and then, you know, Triple H will come back in 2002, and he'll be a big part of that show, but we'll talk about that in Part 4C. But
before
then, we've got to talk about the Royal Rumble, a very good Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
I have in my notes the second best ever to this point. I give it 3.75 stars.
Yep.
I could have done without Drew Carey, although it was kept minimal enough that it was okay. And again, it gives it some of an identity, some differentiation. The ECW reunion stuff where they were doing all the hardcore things, I thought that came across as a bunch of guys who weren't that necessarily that over, just hitting each other with frying pans.
Well,
and like they needed that to get over.
I kind of agree.
I'm surprised about that. I thought you would have like thought that was like the best segment of this. Like,
well, you know, they tended to do overkill, you know, with their hardcore division, and yeah, so yeah, I didn't really necessarily think too much of it. In terms of people making cameos in the match here, surprise cameos out of nowhere, who had more credibility, Drew Carey or the Honky Tonk Man?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. When the Honky Tonk Man came out and said, you people are here to see me sing, you people are here to see me dance, I loved every bit of it. He takes the guitar shot from Kane here.
Yeah.
Kane, who's a big player in this Rumble, which irked me a lot at the time. I'm going to talk about that momentarily. But
you've always kind of had a wild hair for Kane.
Yeah, because it's always like, okay, he's being shunted down the card, and then like he randomly gets pushed. This was a very random push. Interesting that this show, they went, did they go Axe and Smash here with the Hardys starting it? No, they were 1-3.
1-3, but Jeff was eliminated by Matt after they eliminated a couple
guys. They did face off.
They took out Bill Buchanan. They took out Farouk.
Yeah, but Drew Carey shows up early. He's number 5, and they do the whole thing where Kane comes out right next. And, you know, he tries bribing Kane, and Kane's just like, no, and he just jumps out. I guess that was amusing. Drew Carey was in for, what, 2 minutes? That's fine.
2:54.
Okay, that's fine. But Kane is in a lot longer than 2:54, and it was weird. Don't you agree it was weird? He was not being really pushed at all leading into this. He had come off that really stupid feud with Jericho over a cup of coffee.
Right.
And he had been a heel, and he works as a total babyface here and gets over as a babyface. It's just this total...
Only to get eliminated by Austin.
Yeah. It's this total out-of-place confusing... But you know what I'm saying? Like, when you just watch it, like, now, in a vacuum, it's fine, I guess. But, like, I remember the time... this effect. I was like, well, get rid of this Kane. Why is Kane being pushed?
Here's the funny thing.
And he eliminates, like, so many people. Like, isn't it still the record? Like, they still talk about this to this day at the Rumble.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think, of course, Roman Reigns, I think, broke the record.
Oh, that's right.
In 2014. Not my boy. Here's the thing that's funny. We like to single out things that happen that kind of set the template for things to come in the business. This era, what they were doing and would subsequently do, mostly what they would subsequently do with him, Big Show, whatever, this is a prime example what you're talking about here, what they did with him, of microwave booking. They have confidence that there are guys that they have. We can get them back in the main event scene. We just got to nuke them for a little bit. And this was their way of getting Kane
hot.
That's
a great comment. Microwave booking.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah,
Greg
thank
Morris.
You. Thank you.
I don't
you.
Like all your political takes, but I like that one.
Well, the good ones borrow, the great ones steal. I don't know where I got that from. Okay. I got that from some corner of the internet. But they like the microwave guys. This is a perfect example of that. Kane wasn't in the main event picture. Doesn't matter. We'll throw a little bit of
here's the thing, though. He wasn't after
this. He did nothing at WrestleMania.
He was in a hardcore match with Raven and the Big Show. This was just like this bizarre thing that had no...
Weird timing.
Yeah.
Such weird timing.
Now, I will say this. There were, you know, it's funny. I kind of, as much as I bitched about the 2000 roster of guys that were... There were still some jabrons in this, but it got hot late. You had in this one Undertaker, who was not at 2000 either, by the way.
Right.
And then you have both Austin and Rock. I believe this is the only Rumble ever where both Austin and Rock were in. And it's funny that...
I think so, yeah.
Well, no, that's a lie.
Was Rock in 98?
That's a goddamn lie. They're the... Pardon me, I know. This is a Family Values show. they were the last two in 98.
Yeah,
and I think that they're both actually in 97, too, and Rocky was the blue chipper.
But aside from that, this is the only time they were ever in the Royal Rumble together.
This is the only time they're in it together, both as faces. How about that?
That's right. Just didn't put the proviso on it the first time.
Yes. And I think that really helped. It's funny, as much as... So Austin's your winner. Kane is like this kind of this inexplicable highlight. And he does get over by the end
Kane
of the match.
Kane eliminates The Rock, by the way. Yeah, and talk about trying to keep some credibility on Rikishi, albeit they blew this as a possible main event, or not main event, but WrestleMania angle. Rikishi eliminates The Undertaker.
Didn't they do something with Undertaker and Kane, like worked against Rikishi and Haku, who we should bring up? Remember, this was that they were really needling WCW at this point. They're like, we're just going to take Haku because you don't have him under contract. And Haku was kind of getting over as like the hardcore champion at that point.
Yeah, the reigning defending WCW hardcore champion Haku.
I remember kind of laughing about that at the time. I remember that.
That's kind of
funny. Big Show came back in this thing after... being demoted wasn't he like demoted to like OVW for weight issues or he was being lazy? He came back and he like this was another weird thing. He comes in and starts dominating and then just gets thrown out in like a minute and
eliminated by The Rock in 123, which goes to show you, you go back 1 year in time, the positioning of him and The Rock, where it was the big main event angle at the end. Here, he's just an afterthought that gets tossed.
He did, after he gets tossed, though, he does, like, choke slam The Rock through. They tried, but it was weird that, like, it's, you know what? This is, like, the first Rumble where they did this.
Right.
And they still do it to this day. And it makes no, makes no sense. And do you know what they do? Get a guy over, and then they eliminate him.
Yeah.
Which, and, like, the crowd's always pissed. Like, the crowd gets behind a guy, and then you eliminate him. Like, so, like, a big guy comes in, he dominates, he throws up three guys, and JR goes, by God, who's going to throw out this big man? It'll take eight guys. And then, like, one guy eliminates him.
Yep.
And it makes your announcers look stupid, and it's like, well, that was odd.
That's right.
I did want to talk about The Rock, though, because although Austin's your winner, and we'll talk about him, and Kane gets that big push, I think The Rock is very underrated in this match. Is there ever a match? If there's ever been a match where post 99 Rock is underrated, it's this one. Like he's in it for like 40 minutes.
Yeah,
and he's a key part at keeping it over, and you kind of just forget about that in there.
Well, and that's the thing too, as far as roster depth at the top, because and again, I think we really neglected to touch on with 2000. As you said, Undertaker was missing as well as Austin. Undertaker missing is not an oh-by-the-way thing.
No.
I mean, one of the other legitimate main event guys here. So the ability to have Rock in for 40 minutes here, as you said, that is made possible by having Austin by having Undertaker. You don't have the waiting for Godot dynamic of, okay, the guy who's going to win is coming out later.
That's what I'm saying. This is a better Rumble than 2000. Like,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes
now, it. Now, realistically, going in, it figured to be Austin to culminate the comeback story. But it wasn't as glaringly obvious as perhaps some other years.
Yeah. We had blood in this Rumble.
Okay. That's so always a good thing to talk about.
Triple H attacks Austin as payback for
earlier
in the show, and Austin Blades. So let's talk about Austin here, because I think we've covered everything else.
He did a .7 Muta, I believe.
Yes, he did a good Blade job here. I remember at the time, so Rock, in his absence, gotten over really well as a face. Like, the Rock was, like, a baby face that was as over as really any except Austin at his peak and Hogan at his peak, right? And you could argue he was, like, right there. Like
I'd say right there.
Yeah, like, you were not going to get many guys more over as a babyface than The Rock was in 2000, right?
Because it's commonly accepted that he reached parity with Austin at some point. By Rumble 01, you'd have to say it was that point.
Okay. So I remember everyone was getting ready for Austin to come back, and, you know, whereas in 99 it was kind of a luxury to have two babyfaces that strong. Here in late 2000, as we rolled in 2001, everyone was like, okay, this is kind of an issue. I don't know if we can have these guys both on the same side. Mm-hmm. And you had started to hear those rumors of the Austin heel turn coming up, which was a disaster, make no mistake about it.
Right.
Two things. I remember at the time, I thought they should have had Austin, and I'm not saying this was right. I'm just saying this is what I thought at the time, what 20-year-old Kyle Ross thought. That Austin should have just come back as a heel. Not like he couldn't have just shown up and been a heel, but he would come and he would be the guy to screw The Rock against Kurt Angle to cost him the title.
Okay.
And he would have come back, and his whole thing for coming back is, you know, you people forgot about me. This, you know, this Rock's taken my spot. And that would have been his shtick to come back.
Okay.
They didn't do that. They went with the whole who ran him down angle and that was fine. It did good business, and Steve Austin was very over as a face. In retrospect, what I think is that he never should have been a heel, ever.
Right.
And that he certainly never should have gone to WCW in that, because we'll talk a lot more about the failed invasion when we get to 2002. We're probably going to spend a lot, even before we get to the pay-per-view, we're going to talk about what a disaster
that
was.
And I've said before, too, like how he turned heel. Still trying to wear the Fox Fear t-shirts and sell merch. I mean, you need to be Mr. McMahon's corporate stooge here. You need to be wearing his suit. And,
well, the thing is, no one really bought him as heel. Like, the guy, like...
Yeah, but he was trying to have it both ways. He was being a scared coward by, I'm going to be the biggest heel I can be, but I don't want to sell any less merch.
He was effective as it, but it was a terrible decision. I mean, just look at the business numbers. They were terrible. Once he turned heel, it was a disaster. That's why, you know me, and we'll fight on this at a different show. Mm-hmm. It's why I will never put WrestleMania 17 over WrestleMania 3.
Right.
Because it's got one of the worst endings of all time.
I know you won't, and I know that's not the way you're going to vote in the upcoming FDH Lounge Pantheon.
Well,
but
do have to send that to you, don't I?
Yeah.
That was a real jab.
Well, I was going to say, I just wanted to mention it.
Why didn't you say, hey, asshole, why don't you send your ballot in?
Well, here's a funny thing. I've already voted for 17. There's already a vote in it for 3, so you're going to vault 3 ahead of 17 when you do that. There's your impetus.
What about
for
a secret ballot? What am I working with, Carl Rove here, or what?
I guess I shouldn't be divulging this on the air. Yes. I'm not very. Yes. That's very indiscreet
maybe,
of me.
Maybe now I'm going to screw you and just vote for something else. Anyway,
that's very indiscreet.
So it's funny, but with that heel role, so they didn't know, I guess, because they had not purchased WCW. Although the talks were in play, I think Vince in his mind was thinking, okay, maybe I can buy WCW for pennies on the dollar.
In the final 10 days before Mania, they did, out of nowhere, make that deal.
Yes.
So they had to be thinking at WrestleMania, that was an alternative. There's a place to put Austin and Rock both as faces if you send one of them to WCW. There's a way to do it. In terms of a proto-brand split, they chose not to go that way.
Okay, so look, we're going to talk a lot about brand splits in the mini episodes to come.
Yeah.
What needs to be understood, again, first and foremost, is Steve Austin never should have been a heel.
Correct.
It came from Austin originally because this is unfathomable thing today with, like, you know, when you have John Cena having been, like, the lead babyface for 10 years.
Right.
And so many guys kind of being in the same role for so long and nothing ever changes. Steve Austin felt in his mind that he had become a little stale as a babyface,
mm-hmm.
which was maybe true. Maybe he was not peak 98 Austin, but the idea that he was stale as a babyface was wrong.
He was like 85% of what he was then, which is significantly
above. Which is better than like most.
Almost anybody else in the industry. Yeah, exactly. Talk about not seeing the forest for the trees.
Yeah, but that was what they did in that time. You know, you didn't stay. You always had to do things. You know, unlike today where there constantly had to be some big hook every pay-per-view. Something shocking had to happen. But when they purchased WCW,
mm-hmm.
they needed to rethink this whole thing. And granted, that was a short window, only a few days. They needed to be like, oh, my God. What? Forget about turning Steve Austin.
Right.
We all of a sudden have what's going to be a way bigger angle on our hands with getting WCW.
Right.
They screwed it up, obviously, but whatever. But it should have been the biggest thing ever.
Right.
They should have right then and there said, we are not turning Steve Austin heel. We are nixing it, and it's not going to happen. And what's funny is, and you can, this is with the benefit of hindsight, if one of the guys, Austin or Rock, was to turn heel and go with WCW, it actually should have been The Rock, who is a guy who would get booed multiple times in big matches, the first of which was the WrestleMania match, which was in Texas, I know. But, I mean, is Nassau, New York, Brock Lesnar country?
That's a hardcore place, though, and Brock was the indomitable heel champion who didn't show any vulnerability.
Okay, well,
the kind of guy who's always going to get cheered.
He got booed.
Hogan in Montreal was a nostalgia thing. I can rationalize away all three of these. That was Austin's hometown. You put that match in Miami, Austin doesn't get booed out of the building, but Rock's getting more cheered than Austin. Look at 2012. That was supposed to be our 2012. That was supposed to be face versus face. How did it turn out for John Cena?
Here's my point, though. Well,
what?
It didn't turn out well for Cena. That never happened to Steve Austin. Name a time when Steve Austin, in any setting, ever was anything less than cheered universally. That's what I'm saying. Like,
was there any kind of a split at SummerSlam 98? I don't remember.
No.
Okay.
It was kind of a weird. The crowd wasn't as hot, but Austin was clearly the star. And they were also subtly turning Undertaker heel anyway.
Okay.
But that was, to me, like this big misread mm-hmm. in that. It does. Okay, you bring up a good point because it was in Texas. But
right.
you're watching this match, okay?
Right.
Steve Austin versus The Rock. And one of the participants is clearly getting all the cheers from the live crowd.
Yeah.
The other guy is actually getting booed.
Yeah.
And they decide, in their infinite wisdom, to say, well, all right, the guy's going to get cheered. He's going to go heel. And it fell so flat, and it was such a mistake, and I just think that in retrospect, had they had Austin beat The Rock,
mm-hmm.
no Vince McMahon, no heel turn, just beat him. By God, Steve Austin's back on the mountaintop. And then the fallout could have been WCW like attacking him or something. It didn't have to be on the show. Come on Raw afterwards. That would have been so much better than what they did.
Here's the other thing, too, about that, is that matchup there, in terms of having those two in there, again, it was so explosive. They were both arguably at their, okay, Austin maybe not at his peak. The Rock was at his peak. And it was just a way where they were looking.
It was a bigger matchup than it was 2 years previous when they had, like, WrestleMania.
It was absolutely, because The Rock was fully established at the top of the mountain. And they were looking for that redefining moment. They wanted their Bash at the Beach 96 moment of great.
Yes.
There's never been an ending of a show with more clarity as far as the change in direction of an entire company, not just the main event scene, but an entire company. And what's weird is because the crowd was the way that they were, the crowd, there's never been a time, and this whole thing of like, well, we'll book against the crowd and make it the way we want it to come out on TV. No, the crowd made it seem like Vince McMahon turned face by helping Hogan. And JR was having to scream over the crowd.
Austin.
Or by helping Austin, yeah. JR was having to scream over the crowd that this was an Austin heel turn, not a Vince face turn.
Yes.
You didn't need any kind of explanation at Bash at the Beach 96.
No, you didn't. It just did not work. And especially when you see how loved, like, to going back to the point of Austin, I was getting a little stale. I needed to freshen up. But he's since admitted that he was wrong.
Right.
That, did you watch this show? Of course you did, because we're doing a podcast on it.
Yep.
Did Steve Austin in any way seem stale?
No.
At this show? My God, he was over here.
Right.
I just, again, like, that was something that came to me. I'm watching this. I'm like, how did anyone think that this guy should go heel?
Here's the funny thing, though. This is the funny thing, is that, like, there are things that become apparent now that weren't apparent then. Steve Austin now doing his podcast, which is really tremendous. It's enjoyable to listen to, but you hear him on other podcasts. We didn't know this at the time. Steve Austin, just like us, Steve Austin is a ginormous wrestling nerd, okay? He loves wrestling history and this and that and whatever and booking and psychology and everything. Like Steve Austin thought in his head, I'm going to do the same thing as Hogan. And
yes.
It didn't work out that way. It was he was blinded by, they made it work there. This seems like a decent thing for here. He got fooled by the circumstances, but it came from, you know, his heart was in the right place. He thought creatively it was going to be the right thing, because Steve Austin's a guy who loves the creative side of wrestling. He'd actually be a hell of a booker, to be honest with you, if he wanted to do it.
I don't know. Some people have said he was, like, great at coming up ideas for himself, but he never really had anything for anyone else.
Well, he's a guy right now who's screaming from the hilltops about how misused Cesaro is.
Well, I know that makes
credit.
Him, like, you know, he should be, like, you know,
absolutely
winning the Pulitzer Prize in Europe.
Pretty
no,
much.
No, you're right. I guess you're right. I guess that was wrong. I guess.
Right.
Well, I guess he is good at identifying flaws, like
right.
A lot of fans are, like people like maybe you and me and people listening to this.
But I think
but I don't know if he's got any ideas. I don't know if he has the idea to get Cesaro.
He's
over.
Given good advice. Well, I mean, you know, he gave Kevin Owens famously the advice 10 years ago in an airport about running his mouth and, you know, trying to get over by being obnoxious. So, you know, he's got a good mind for helping people, too. I just think he thought in his own mind he was coming up with something really epic, and it was going to be as big as Hogan's heel turn.
Well,
and
they clearly want to do something, but here's the thing, again, and I mm-hmm. get that. I get the psychology, even though it was wrong
right.
at the time and certainly in retrospect.
Right.
But once WCW fell into their lap,
yep.
And I know it's hard. I wasn't there in 2001, and I can only imagine how hectic and chaotic that company is behind the scenes leading up to WrestleMania. Somebody, I don't care who, Pat Patterson, anybody, needed to stand up and scream, what the hell are we doing? We have the biggest angle of all time right now. We do not need to turn Steve Austin as a heel. He needs to be the cornerstone of WWE going against WCW stars. That's your money.
Because I don't want to hear from anybody that it was too late in that last 10 days.
Vince McMahon, honestly, when he came sauntering out for the main event,
yeah.
It shouldn't have been to help Austin turn heel. It should have been like, guys, we're not doing this anymore.
Well, not only that, you know, Austin has even said that, like, you know, while, you know, 2020 hindsight, he would have called it in the ring and said, Vince, I'm going to stunner you instead, and we're going to change directions here. Now, that would have been a hell of a thing to tell the boss in real time.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, though. For anybody that thinks it was too late, a week to 10 days out to change it. I give you WrestleMania 30, where it was decided by Vince McMahon the day of the show the streak was ending. I give you the weekend of WrestleMania 31, where when the company decided, with Brock Lesnar sticking around and Roman Reigns not over as he needed to be, Seth Rollins was going to be option
C. Remember what
they do things at the last minute all the time, even for WrestleMania. Even the biggest things
get
changed.
Now they do. Back then it was unheard of. And that was for the better, usually. See, when I'm reading a lot about 98,
mm-hmm.
WWF and WCW right now, and I'm kind of at the late part. You know, Meltzer puts up his old observers. I like to read them.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about the late 98 period is, like, WCW didn't even, like, attempt to have long-term booking. Like, they had no clue what Starcade was going to look like in October.
Right.
And WWF in 98 had a very clear vision. Like, they knew The Rock was going to do the big heel turn at Survivor Series. They knew probably that the plan would be to do Rock Austin at Mania and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. They had good long-term booking is the right way to do things. Like, I don't like how they change things at the last minute now.
Right.
But.
You do have to be flexible when circumstances
yes.
change.
And what's funny is I actually agreed with the Rollins thing.
Yeah. It makes sense.
And, you know, the streak, whatever. I think I agree with that. I don't know if time has told the story on that. But this is an instance where, and I know it's so easy to say in retrospect that, okay, I get it. you know, business is good. You need to do something big. Maybe creatively, you're struggling a little bit. Dude, you're getting WCW.
Right.
You don't need to do anything else. Like, right. That's going to be the biggest angle ever.
Right.
Like, you don't need to do something else. Like,
right.
I know that at the time, maybe,
mm-hmm.
Steve Austin just going over The Rock clean in this main event would not have been earth-shattering. But it was a good match up until the end. I mean, it was a really good match, man. And you could have just started something with WCW like the night or so after.
You could protect The Rock, too. Like,
well, the thing
ref
with the
bump, you know, give him a finishing maneuver, one, two, but there's no ref there. You know what I mean? There's ways you can protect The Rock
they did
and defeat.
I mean, that's what they did. I mean,
right.
They were trying to protect The Rock. Remember,
right.
Like, Austin gave him, like, 8 billion share, whatever. I mean, they protected
him. Well, because
they
made it a hardcore match at the last minute.
Yeah, but you're right. They could have protected him. And if he would have gone down, I think it would have played better into, oh, well, what side's The Rock? Because he comes back in the summer of 01.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, is he going to be with? Because, like, no one bought that he was going to go with WCW at that
right.
point. Because Austin, I mean, you know, Austin had already gone heel.
Right.
And so, what, Rock will too? No one bought that. But
right.
if Austin was, like, the face of WWF
mm-hmm.
side, there would have been some intrigue, I think, with The Rock. And I, again, will state,
mm-hmm.
maybe you go with The Rock. Is that, you know, as, you know, I talked about earlier, into 20-year-old Kyle Ross thought Austin would turn heel right when he came back, eventually go back to face.
Mm-hmm.
With the mentality of, oh, I'm underappreciated. You people forgot about me and cheer The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that could have worked for The Rock, too, in the summer of 01,
right.
where he came back and said, you know, you people boo me at WrestleMania.
It's kind of what he did in early 03.
Yes!
Yeah.
And we would have gotten more mileage out of what was a phenomenal heel run.
Right.
Because Rock, to be honest with you, better as a heel, I think.
I'm not going to say better, although he's outstanding as a heel,
yeah.
but he's outstanding as a properly positioned face, which, by the way, here's a teaser for one we're doing 02. I identified when I watched the pay-per-view on something that most people would never even pick up on, the subtle seeds of what might begin to get the crowd to turn on The Rock subsequently in 02. We'll talk about that with the 02 Rumble.
Yeah, and we're going to talk, obviously, not only about that show,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have to spend a lot of time before we get into the show itself, 02, with the failed invasion angle.
Yep.
Because if you just turn on, if you're like us and you're just watching the Rumble shows,
yeah,
you go from 2001 to 2002, you wouldn't have a damn clue in the world that the invasion ever happened.
Spoiler alert, guys. There was a tune out now if you don't want to know what happens, but they brought in WCW and the remnants of ECW and teamed them up, and it was the biggest shark show in the history of the business.
And within 5 months, it was over.
It was over. Ended with a fart instead of a nuclear bomb, and the biggest underachievement in the history of the business, and I don't know if anything else even comes close. Because
no, I agree with
that's
that.
The War of the Worlds that people had been pointing to for multiple years.
It's one of those things that had they done anything else, it would have been better. Like, there's very few angles in the history of wrestling where it's like, well, what do you think they should
right.
have done? I don't know anything else.
I'll tell you this. I'll say this. There, in the late 90s into like about 2000 or so, there was a bunch of guys that I met in a scratch bowling league that I fell in with that were big wrestling fans, and I used to watch monthly pay-per-views with them. We'd all go over to one dude's house and watch them. Okay, everybody there was smart fans, sheet readers, etc. Okay, so these are people that knew the business. There's one of these guys, dude, I swear to God, the spring of 99, '98, when Bischoff called out Vinnie Mac at the pay-per-view in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Slamboree 98.
Yeah. He was convinced Vinnie Mac's going to come out because he's going, you know what? How do we know behind the scenes it's not all owned by the same guy? Like, a full-on smart fan said that to me. But there was that sentiment out there, Kyle, that undercurrent of, boy, oh boy, oh boy, that's the biggest thing there could ever possibly be, is this company against this company, and they blew it. Spoiler alert, guys. I hope I didn't ruin it for
you. Do you know
what
my favorite part of that angle was at Slamboree 98?
What?
Tony Schiavone busting out, well, we'll know it's Vince if Jim Ross gets out first carrying his bags.
That was outstanding.
That was like the only thing that Schiavone ever said that was funny.
Yeah.
Actually, I take that back. The highlight of that show was the Dean Malenko dressing up as Ciclope. But Schiavone's burn was number two.
That was pretty damn good. But, yeah, there's a lot of intrigue to get to. Some table setting that we'll have to do on O2. But it'll be very, very interesting there because, again, we had, of the three huge breakthrough stars of the Attitude Era, Rock, Austin, Triple H, it would be the only time when all three of them in early 02 would be in full alignment as actual faces. And it was to be, it was short-lived in the case of some of the three of them. But as far as it went, the seeds of the downfall of Rock and Triple H as faces in 02, I think were apparent. Not apparent yet with Triple H at the Rumble, but certainly with The Rock. And we'll talk about that certainly as well. Anything else to get to on 01?
No, I think a very good show. Comparable to 2000. It's the second best Rumble I've seen so far. And business is good, but not for much longer, huh?
Exactly. Business is not going to be picking up as we move through the 2000s. But it'll still be very interesting.
We will not go to the nadir of part two on this odyssey of the 93 to 95.
No.
It will never get to that point.
Bad years are coming, but 02 is not nearly as bad as they're going to be. We'll get to that next time. Thank you for tuning in, everybody.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.